Let me go to Breed Caffrey in Temple Oak. Breed, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
You contacted us. You were watching this programme last night, the Would You Believe series, Mick Pilo, about the Legionnaires of Christ.
I was very sad watching it, because I actually nearly felt suffocated by all the men that were in it.
Well, did you know of the Legionnaires of Christ in Leopardstown in Dublin?
I know where they are. Okay. I've met one or two, all right. I think they're very right wing. No, my main point is we are the family of God. An institution puts a wrong picture on, you know, I think Jesus, you know, we are his family, right? And where there's only just men, we're dysfunctional, I feel.
And when we leave that argument aside. But one of the big things that came across the program last night was that in 1956, 58 years ago, there were complaints about this man who founded the Legionnaires of Christ, Marcial Maciel del Goado, and he's known as Father Maciel, is not what they call him.
Yes.
There was complaints about him to the Vatican in 1956.
Yes.
And it was only 6 years ago, 52 years later, that he's deceased now, unfortunately, but he was a charlatan, he was a thief, he had two families, he was an abuser, a child abuser, a paedophile, and yet the Vatican were getting complaints about this man in 1956. Over half a century ago, and did nothing for 50 years.
Yeah, I think that is the sad point of it. I do wonder sometimes when reports go to the Vatican, you know, who gets them, who looks at them. I mean, they don't have feeling. They mustn't have feeling. Things haven't changed. You know, I feel it's if we were all together, like a Christian community, like men and women, like maybe these things will be taken more serious.
And Breed, I don't know what age you are, Breed.
Maybe. Me, yes. Yeah,
okay. So you were around in the 50s. Now I know they were recruiting women for another. Regnum Christi out in Blackrock, isn't it?
Yes.
And that came in under for severe criticism as well. But were you aware that they were very active? I know they were very active in our school in Ballyfermot in the 1960s and 1970s, and they used to bring in a minibus every single Sunday, and we'd all go down to the roundabout in Ballyfermot and get on the minibus and go to this incredible building in Leopardstown. It was like our holidays. And
we would get
Spanish, really Spanish tortillas for the first time, Spanish omelets for the first time. we're entertained. And I know some of the guys that we knew actually signed up at a very, very young age. Now, Paul Lennon's on the line. Paul, good afternoon.
Thanks, Joe.
Good afternoon.
Stay there,
you.
Breed, please.
Okay.
Paul, what age were you when you signed up?
I was 17, going on 18.
Mm. And where were you in Dublin at the time?
I was from Cabra West, and I was going to St. Vincent's in Glasnevin.
And they came to your school the same way they came to our school?
Yeah, they came to school. Actually, the man who was very, very, very efficient, very famous in Ireland, James Quandro. And we used to call him Father James. And there again, you know, he was only a seminarian, but he kind of masqueraded as an ordained priest.
So did you take this Sunday minibus trip out to Leopardstown?
No, I was before that. I was 1961, so among the very, 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 very first. It was before the Legion actually had a proper house in Ireland. They only had the house in Bundoran by the sea.
Okay.
That was in 1961.
So why did you join?
I think that because it was like they're presenting a new brand of priests. I think a lot of people in Ireland at that time had the desire, the wish to be a missionary, and they were Mexicans, so the kind of idea was, why join an Irish group if the Mexicans are coming here? Why not they join a Mexican group and get the real story and be able to be a missionary in Latin America?
And did you have a vocation?
Only God knows that, you know. Yeah. So I thought I had, naturally.
Okay. I'll put that question a different way. I didn't mean to be facetious, Paul. What I meant was, would you have joined, had you got the propulsion or the vocation in you to join a religious grouping anyway?
I might have. I remember there was a very nice Dominican recruiter who came to the school, because, you know, at that time there were tons of priests coming in to recruit you, and So we must have had about 15 that year at St. Vincent's. And I did say I was interested in the Dominicans. But then, of course, Father James came in with his Mexican charm, you know, his broken English. And he kind of, he actually took us all in, or he was very convincing and very charming, and he seemed like he was doing a great job, you know. We wanted, and part of me wanted something exciting and something adventurous and something different.
Almost exotic. But, Paul, they were very successful here in Ireland. And indeed, some of the leaders still in the Legionnaires of Christ are from Ireland. But they were very successful here in Ireland. You stayed for 23 years. Did you meet this man, Father Maciel?
Absolutely. Because we were the first Irish group, and he would always kind of... He was very good at making you feel important. That was part of his charm and part of his manipulation. So we felt very important. We were the first eight Irish recruits, and we were the first to enter the novitiate in Salamanca. And we flew out of Dublin Airport to Lourdes on the plane with Father Maciel. So this was like a tremendous privilege for us as the founding Irish members. And we were there, you know, with Declan Murphy, Brian Farrell, who is actually a bishop now in Rome, and six other fellas, you know. Actually, one of those who says he was abused personally by Maciel later on.
And I presume you were not aware of any of the abuse that was going on.
Absolutely not. I knew that question was going to come up today, I was trying to figure out how Maciel did this. And I was writing down here on a notepad that you might say he had like concentric circles of people who were closer or not so close to him. You know, like he had his hidden circles. And then the other, so his victims were kind of only knew, they only knew him that intimately. And sometimes the victims didn't know each other among themselves. And of course, as they were keeping their vow of silence, and he was very good at manipulating them, they probably felt a lot of guilt. They felt that they were doing something wrong and something right at the same time. So they were very, very confused. And they never discussed their abuse among themselves while in the Legion. So that just shows the amount of control that he had over them, you know?
But you left, you left what, in the mid-80s?
1984, yeah.
And why did you leave, Paul?
Well, I'd say the big story is that a series of disagreements with Maciel, because Maciel was our superior all that time. I mean, I had spiritual direction with Maciel via letters all the time I was in the Legion for 23 years. I'd write to him every month, and occasionally he would send me a reply to kind of keep me on my toes and give me some spiritual advice. But he put me in charge of a thing in Mexico called the School of Faith, and I was the director there. So maybe I got a bit big for my boots, as they say, and gradually started kind of disagreeing with him. And that was a real no-no. So I think that's an important thing to understand about Maciel. And the Legion, maybe the superiors still do the same thing, that once you start doubting or disagreeing or questioning, you kind of have fallen from grace. So already he had sent me to the missions in Quintana Roo in Mexico twice, and I was just getting fed up. And I finally had a major confrontation with nuestro padre, our Father Maciel, in his hometown in 84. I kind of lost it, and you know, we had a bit of a shouting match there, and that was the end of me and the Legion of Christ, you know.
And when you left, was there, do you get a pension or do you get any recognition of your contribution for over a quarter of a century to the order?
Oh, no way. I remember I have letters, which I have actually in my, I wrote a memoir, by the way, might as well do my plug, called Our Father Who Art in Bed. A rather risque name, but that's what it was, Our Father Who Art in Bed. And I describe how I was kind of bargaining with him, trying to get something out of him when I left the Legion, because I went into the Diocese of Washington, because the change was so big, having been, you know, cooked up in the Legion for so many years. I was afraid, I think, of the outside world, so I transitioned to the Diocese of Washington and was here 4 years, quite quite more happily than ever before with the Legion, you know.
And when when it was revealed, in 2008, 2009, all this litany finally put together.
Yeah.
I presume you were not surprised.
No, not surprised. Well, first of all, you know, I as I say, I was not one of Father Maciel's admirers. I you know, even while still in the Legion, you know, you will notice that Paul Lennon was never sent on a mission to the United States, or was he ever? He was never asked to get money from benefactors, because maybe because I was a little bit short and not so pretty. And also because I never totally bought into the Legion. So I think I was like a thorn in the Legion's side. But they didn't want to get rid of me because I was one of the first Irish guys.
And Paul, but anyway, the other Irish guys that joined, and we know there's Irish women involved in Regan Christie, but the other Irish men who joined up, did most of them, have most of them stayed through the collapse of the belief in Maciel?
That's a good one. Well, I wouldn't say so. I think there's also been a big exodus of Irish guys. I mean, a big exodus of Irish guys. I mean, from that very first group of eight, and that's going way back, of course, I think only one or two are still in the Legion.
Well, Declan Murphy was mentioned last night. Is he still in the Legion?
Oh, no. Declan is out of there and married for donkey's years, as they say. Okay. So Declan would have left... in the late 80s here, he left the priesthood. He also had come to the Diocese of Washington, and we...
Okay,
we,
but obviously he wasn't involved in the program at all. That's why I was wondering what had happened to him, because his brother, the well-known
Declan
broadcaster...
I think Declan opted out of participating.
Okay, that's fair. But his brother, Mike Murphy, was a powerful voice in the program, but he was saying this incredible description, because his two brothers and his sister joined the Legionnaires of Christ, but he was saying his brother comes home from school on a Friday, that's age 17.
Yeah.
And he joins the Legionnaires of Christ on the Saturday, and his mother doesn't see him again for 9 years. It sounds like the Scientologists.
Well, that's by all means, the parallels are quite good. The parallels are not far away. The other thing that the Scientologists do, of course, is sue, you know, when you don't agree with them. And the Legion will occasionally do that. And what is it called then? Come to a settlement and swear you to silence. So
okay,
I'll just say that in passing, shall
okay,
we say.
Okay, stay with us, Paul. 51551, and we'll be back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And 51551 is our text number. Jack Kyo was also from Dublin. Jack, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you? What age were you, Jack? I read your book, by the way. It's a fine. I haven't read Paul's, but I've read yours. I will when I can get it. I thought it was a very, very honest book, Jack. I thought it was must have been a very difficult book to write, because you got the sense on the one hand that you gave up a significant part of your life to something you dearly believed in and originally thought was deeply meaningful. But then slowly and gradually you felt betrayed. What age were you when you joined the Legionnaires of Christ, Jack?
I was just turned 17, Joe.
And how did you end up in there?
Yeah, I finished my leaving cert. I went to Sing Street in Dublin. Mm-hmm. And I was just a year younger than everybody else in the school. And one of the things I've learned is, you know, don't make any big decisions when you're 17. If your kids finish the leaving cert at 17, I don't know, I'd put them back a year. I felt that had a huge influence on my life. But anyway, yeah, I joined when I was 17. And I was probably in the third generation of Irish. I heard Paul there. Paul was in the first. He was up in Bundoran. So I was in a place called Hazelbrook House out in Malahide, and then we went out to Belgard Castle out in Clondalkin. Mm-hmm. And I never made it to the Leopardstown Palace, as you called it.
It was incredibly impressive, and I was brought out there, I can tell you. I was tempted as well. How long did you stay in for, Jack?
I was in for 20 long years.
And why did you leave?
Well, I think, like you said yourself, when I wrote the book, I just sort of the background thing on it, I left and I got so busy. I married straight after I left, and then we had kids, and so I just sort of spent my whole life working, trying to catch up on 20 lost years of no revenue, no nothing. And when I wrote the book, it was at the urging of my kids. They were saying, like, why don't you write down these stories? And so it was very cathartic for me to help me, as I wrote the book, to figure out why I joined and why I left and how could I possibly have been fooled for so long. So in a nutshell, not unlike Paul, different to Paul, I had a great relationship with Maciel pretty much all the time. I was one of the go-getter PR guys. I was sent to the States. I was sent to Mexico. I worked with the rich and the famous. But little by little, I thought the Legion was developing very strong, for want of a better word, like cult-like qualities. We were really turning into a cult. We were living based on hundreds and hundreds of rules. Every part of your life was reglemented. You couldn't listen to pop music. There was nothing you could do. And they had the first, what they called, general chapter in the Legion, an extraordinary general chapter when Maciel convoked it. This would have been in the mid-70s, and I thought there was going to be a relaxing of the rules now and say, this is getting absolutely ridiculous. And he was starting to tell people, you know, if you leave the Legion, you'll go to hell. And, you know, we all believed it at that time. And, you know, you're young, you're vulnerable, you've grown up in sort of Catholic Ireland, and we're very ripe for that. And so as I really realized the way he started to manipulate our minds more than anything, this is where it's like Paul. I confronted him in their house in the United States up in Orange, and I told him what I thought. And he sort of pulled a mask down. I mean, he was always quite austere, although I had a good relationship with him. But he became very paternal, or at least so I thought. And he said, yeah, you're right. And I said, look, you manipulated that first general chapter. It was all rigged. You only brought the people who would vote exactly what you wanted, and you didn't bring anybody who wouldn't. And there were people at that chapter who actually canonically, you know, from canon law perspective, shouldn't have been added, I think. Anyway, he said, you're right on all of this. He said, so what are we going to do? So I used to love driving. That was the name of the book, you know, driving straight on crooked lines. Because anytime I had a little crisis or I wanted to leave, he'd say, oh, let's put you driving the big 64-seat Mercedes bus or something like this. So he says, I'll send you back to Rome and you can get your PhD and we'll tell them that you want to drive the bus. And I said, look, that doesn't work for me anymore. So make a long story longer, he ended up sending me to Africa, to Gabon in Central West Africa on a one-way ticket. I was given $100 and an address in Africa, and that was the last I heard of him.
And when you arrived in Africa, this is, I'm trying to recollect your book, the man that you were sent out to be with, so to speak, to walk with, had very odd, to say the least.
Yeah, he was a very good guy. He still is.
Yeah, but he'd no interest in you being there, had he?
Well, A, he didn't know I was coming.
Yeah.
And then B, the bishop that I was sent to go serve. As a little kid, I always wanted to go work with lepers in Africa. I used to love Father Damien and all those stories, you know, Father Damien. So when I got out to Gabon, it turned out that the bishop didn't know who the hell I was or what I was coming for. And Luis Lerma was hell-bent on getting out of Africa. He absolutely hated it. His health wasn't the best. And so I persuaded him to stay on for a couple of months because I said, there's no way I'm staying here on my own. I was quite terrified. It is, you know, an animistic society, polygamy. Wasn't a Catholic, wasn't really a Christian country. And the health conditions were absolutely awful. I probably lost, I'm sure I lost 20 or 30 pounds when I was out there. I got very, very sick. And then had to sort of con the poor bishop to get the money to get out of Gabon because, like I say, myself and Luis, neither of us had any money. And I think Maciel probably, you know, in hindsight, and this is the terribly hard part about it all, and it's what I loved about RTE's program, they just sort of gave the facts. So when I wrote my book, a lot of the facts became sort of obvious to me, but not so obvious as when I was talking to Mick Pilo. And then you say, oh, my God, this, oh, my God, that. So it was actually very hard to go through the whole process, not talking about it, but just to realize the depth of the trickery and the treachery and what an awfully complicated, perverse man Marcel Maciel was.
The other thing that shot out of the program for me was the new revelations about the Vatican knowing and the Vatican being aware of allegations about Maciel going back five decades. and doing nothing about it. In fact, not only doing nothing about it, actually extolling him and praising him publicly through this process when they had letters under file saying this man is not a Catholic for a start in terms of what he's doing to people. And even theologically and canonically what he was doing as well. But the Vatican sat back and they did nothing. And there was meetings with Pope Paul, wasn't it? They knew he was confronted.
Yeah.
So he can't say Benedict knew, Pope Benedict, when he was Cardinal Ratzinger.
John Paul
knew. John Paul actually elevated him again. When you saw that in the programme, what did you think?
Well, it's sort of interesting. I was telling my wife that that first investigation that was done in the 50s, we always heard that something bad had happened and, you know, bad people were out to get Maciel, but not to believe a word of it. And I suppose what must be hard now is looking back on it, it's very hard to realize how isolated we were, Joe. No legionary. And I mean, they've relaxed a lot of these rules now. But you couldn't read the newspaper. You couldn't look at TV. You couldn't listen to the radio. You couldn't listen to pop music. I saw my parents for a sum total of 20 days in the 20 years that I was in the Legion. So, you know, when we went to the university in Rome, I remember one of the philosophy professors, I was sort of older because they'd sent me out to Mexico for 10 years. And he seemed to like me, and he thought I asked intelligent questions in class. And he said, let's go have a cup of coffee and talk about all this philosophy stuff, a Dominican. And I said, no, you know, I'm a legionary. I can't go have coffee with anybody. He thought we were nuts. And so what I'm saying is we were so isolated and so living in our own little world that we didn't know. But now here's the interesting thing. When I, you know, the driver, because there's always somebody designated, one brother was the receptionist, another guy was in charge of the bell, and I was in charge of driving the bus and the car. So one of the Vatican investigators, Monsignor Polidoro, he was a Chilean Franciscan bishop. And as far as I know, he was one of the Vatican investigators in that 1950 investigation. And I drove him to the airport, and I always wondered what the heck was going on about this great blessing, they used to call it, this awful thing that had happened to Maciel. And I said, Monsignor, if I may, can I ask you a question about what happened in 1950? He said, yeah, of course. And again, to make a long story longer, he said, oh, no, that nothing happened. Father Maciel was attacked by very bad people. And, you know, so I'm a relatively young seminarian. I believe that.
Okay.
And then so I see Juan Vaca, who I knew very, very well. I spent 3 or 4 months on my own driving around the north of Spain doing vocational recruiting with Vaca, who was on the program last night. And he was one of the first who made the most damning allegations against Maciel.
About sexual abuse.
And I got to say, like, for 20 years, I never believed a word that Vaca was saying, because I'm saying, well, I heard Monsignor Polidoro, and Vaca never said a word of this to me when I was in the Legion, and here he is recruiting little guys for the apostolic school. And this is where you feel really bad now. You say, oh, my God, these early guys who made all of those accusations, they weren't believed. And I think 99% of the legionaries did not believe them. So they got a double whammy. You know, they'd been abused. They talked to the Vatican and nobody believed them. And that's absolutely awful.
And Jack, now, what's the future for the Legionnaires of Christ? Because there's still quite a few Irish people there. And
there are.
There were some of them were interviewed.
And
they're very
good men there. Yeah. I must say, Joe, just looking at them last night, the two men who spoke, Owen Kearns and Shoggle, the other fellow, I actually feel terribly sorry for them because they were as duped as anybody. Some of them obviously knew what was going on, but I think they probably hadn't got a clue what to do. And if I may just, the comment about like the Vatican and it's not doing anything, I dug up all these letters that I wrote to Rome. I wrote to Ratzinger when he was a cardinal, and I have a note signed by him back to me through Maciel sort of saying what's going on. And I wrote a subsequent letter to the man in charge of the congregation for religious when I was leaving, and I wanted to get my dispensation so I could get married. And I wrote down all of this stuff. I'd completely forgotten about this, Joe. It's a very long letter.
And what did Cardinal Ratzinger?
It came back with like a postcard saying, sorry, you sent this. We're not sure why you sent it to us. You sent it to the wrong department, and we're going to forward it to the right department. And so the bottom line is, you know, in the 1980s, the Vatican didn't even have a computer. So you had all these cardinals in charge of all of these big congregations, you know, the bureaucrats. And they would have all these little monsignors and priests working for them. And I don't think any of the top guys, it was so easy for those letters not to go anywhere. And then they just rubber stamped and sent off. And Maciel had lots of guys working in, not lots of guys, two or three guys who worked in the Vatican congregation.
Who were protecting him, and
yeah, they were. They'd see a letter that shouldn't get there, and so it didn't get in. So what I think I'm saying is in the Vatican in those days, and I'm not sure that it's changed, actually, there's no system of checks and balances. So you have Maciel found the order in Mexico, right, with a whole bunch of little kids, 12-year-olds. Then he brings them over to Spain, and then he brings them over to Rome. And then he sets up a house in Ireland, and then he sets up a whole heap of houses in the States, and then he sets up more houses in Mexico. So who's actually controlling all of that? There's nobody. Yeah. And so he's widely regarded as a holy man. Though I'll say one of the big surprises that Mick Pilo pointed out to me, and it really hit me like a ton of bricks, John Charles McQuaid, who was the Archbishop of Dublin, and he was sort of very grandiose, if you saw him there in the program with the guy, you know, carrying his robes along behind him. But he came out to visit us. John Charles knew my father. My father worked in UCD and sort of got to be known, Paddy Keogh. And so John Charles asked me, he wanted to know, where was Jack Keogh, and was Jack Keogh happy? But then for years, John Charles was presented as the great patron of the Legion and how he loved us and how he'd gotten us into Dublin. And so there you go. So another seal of approval. Turns out that John Charles had written a letter, Pilo hasn't, saying, you know, I think these guys are really, really creepy. And he put a Monsignor from Finglas, Monsignor Glennon. He sort of was John Charles' spy to go out and look at the legionaries. And we all thought Glennon loved us. And good for John Charles, you know, he was checking it out. But he didn't do anything. The Pope didn't do anything. The bishops didn't do anything.
Let me ask Paul as well, just finally, Paul, what now for the Legionnaires of Christ?
Oh, well, they changed their colour and the chameleon stays alive.
And what do you think of the of priests? Remember, most of their lives have been in... How can you throw up all your life's work because you discovered that the boss is a fraud and a paedophile?
Right. Well, they say that one of the signs of a cult is that it's easy to get in and it's hard to leave. So that's one sign. And then the older you get, the harder it is to leave. So, I mean, the guys you're talking to today, we left in our 40s. Once you get beyond that, it's very hard to start all over again. Like we had to get a job at 40 years of age. We didn't know how to do that, right? I mean, it's... So that's it. And then you've given your whole life to that. And it's hard to say, as Jack was able to acknowledge, you know, I've been duped. I've been had.
Okay.
It's very hard to recognize that.
Okay, Paul Lennon and Jack Keogh. By the way, that program is on the RTE player. It's called The Legion. 51551.